Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the March 22, 2012 meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission. Ramona, would you kindly call the roll?
Commissioner Christensen?
Here.
Commissioner Irving?
Present.
Commissioner Murphy?
Here.
Commissioner Topping?
Here.
Chairman O'Grady?
Here. All please stand for the flag pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, I'll open the meeting to public comment. I don't have any speaker slips for public comment. Seeing no one approaching the podium, I will close public comment. And I would ask Ms. Griffin for any planning staff updates.
Let's see if I can find my microphone. Oh, there it is.
There's someone.
So the only update I have for you is to remind you, you do have a March 29th meeting. Okay. Hello? There we go. You do have a March 29th meeting. There's only one item on it, so you should be out by noon. And you have a number of items on your April 12th meeting, but you will have no April 26th meeting. That meeting has been canceled. So you're on for April 12th, off for April 26th, on again for May 10th. Again, you have three or four items on that. And then there's a good potential that we will cancel the May 31st meeting.
24th?
But we're unsure about the 24th yet. Uh-oh. That's one of those months where you have the extra meeting. Yeah. It doesn't appear that we need that extra meeting in May, so there's a really good chance we'll go ahead and cancel that one. And the 24th is still, we're still waiting for items on that, so I'll let you know about that next time. The other item is that the board did hear the rural recreation interpretation and agreed with your commission's interpretation. They made actually no changes to it. They thought it was very well done.
Was that a unanimous vote, do you recall?
I believe, yes, it was a unanimous vote.
Okay, thank you. Okay, that brings us to the first item. Oh, no, it doesn't. I'm sorry. It's the consent agenda. We actually do have one item this week on the consent agenda. Excuse me. And they're the September 8th, 2011 Planning Commission minutes. Does anyone from the public or does any commissioner wish to pull that item or speak to it? I guess not. So may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Thank you very much. Ramona, please call the roll.
Commissioner Christensen?
Aye.
Commissioner Irving?
Aye.
Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Chairman O'Grady?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. And now this does bring us to our first hearing item. Ramona, would you please introduce item one?
Hearing to consider a request by Leon Van Buren for a reconsideration of development plan D960312D. County file number DRC2011-
due to the Regional Water Quality Control Board's moratorium. So this is a site plan that would show, it shows all five buildings. Here's an aerial of the site. This is where the fifth building would be constructed. The other four buildings are here, 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 and here. So the applicant recently applied for the fifth building, and with this building, more parking is required. This was a phased project. However, the future parking area is located where the septic leach field is. And so the second phase of the project was not anticipated until a community-wide sewer was available. However, the applicant wants to proceed now. The septic septic system will not be needed once the project can hook up to a community-wide sewer. This project may be familiar to you as the applicant requested a planning director determination last October. They requested this modification to modify the parking requirements. However, planning director denied this request since the appropriate process for to modify parking is a reconsideration. The applicant appealed that decision to this planning commission, and the planning commission considered the appeal and denied it. So the applicant is requesting now to defer a portion of the parking until the site is connected to the community-wide sewer. Parking requirements are generally determined by use and floor area. Due to the occupancy limits for the site, all of the parking is not needed at this time. Staff supports the additional reduction in parking, provided occupancy is limited by the conditions of approval. And once the project connects to a community-wide sewer, they would install the rest of the parking. Staff is relying on the previously adopted mitigated negative declaration because there are no substantial changes proposed and no substantial changes in circumstance, and there is no new information. I also handed out a revised finding E, which County Council Jim Orton prepared. And with that, staff is recommending approval of development plan, coastal development permit, DRC 2011-00046, based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions in Exhibit B. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. Any commission questions for staff at this point? Commissioner Topping.
Yep. The occupancy limit, how would that be managed?
Currently, we are managing the occupancy through tenant improvements at the site. So they could construct the shell building of Building 5, but then when they come in for a tenant improvement, the building division would review that and make sure that the occupancy didn't exceed the total for the site.
And then the other thing is, do you have any sense of what the current occupancy is for the four buildings? The percentage of floor area that's
utilized? It's 85 right now.
85?
People.
People.
Yes.
But you don't know what the floor area is. So what does that 85 represent out of the total capacity, for example?
Well,
I guess where I'm going here is, doesn't look like 85 people to me. It looks less occupied because there's a lot of vacant space. And so if the question is, I mean, not that this is a big deal, but if this were to somehow fill up before you go ahead and build a building, you're saying that the occupancy, the TIs would control whether or not it was they were underparked at that point.
That's correct.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Any other commissioner questions for staff at this time? Okay. Seeing none, then I would ask the applicant if the applicant wishes to speak. And by the way, if you would kindly fill out a speaker slip.
Yeah, I apologize. We got here a little bit late. You guys were moving along at a good clip.
It was in the nick of time.
Thank you. Marshall Ohilski, I'm representing the applicants. We were here once before with our appeal of director's determination, and then it was decided that we should come back for reconsideration of the permit, so that's why we're back here. I think that Mr. Topping's questions were answered well. I mean, there is a restriction on there of 120.
The most southerly parking lot where, yeah, that one. That does have an exit out onto the street, a second exit, right? There's two exits. There's an entry, and is there an exit right there? Yeah. Okay. that was one question. And then the other, um, there was an original reduction in this project of parking area required. Is that historically? Is that right? Yeah. But the applicant's not asking to not build parking once the sewer is in. They just want to defer it.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. I have a few questions, if no other commissioner does. Let's see where to start. Current, and this maybe gets back a little bit to what Commissioner Topping was asking earlier. How many parking spaces are required by current parking standards for this development? And how does that compare with what you're asking us to approve?
The total parking required for the all five structures would be 124 parking spaces. The reason why they allowed for the reduction is that the project was going to include street improvements, and so the street improvements would also have parking located within the street right of way.
Which they do.
Yeah, that was part of the waiver, original waiver.
Right.
Okay. Now, as far as the number of occupants allowed going forward until the connection of the sewer, I believe you said in your presentation that that would be governed and controlled, enforced, if you will, by the planning department via the permits issued for tenant improvements.
That's correct.
Did I hear that correctly?
Yes.
Okay, so the 85, current occupancy of 85 that you put in your staff report, is that based on currently approved tenant improvements?
Yes.
It is. Okay. Okay, page 1-5 are the new conditions of approval. And I guess I have to ask why you decided to delete or supersede all of the prior conditions of approval from 1999. And insert these new ones rather than just amending them by just focusing on the parking issue that we're discussing here today.
We thought it would be cleaner to actually take away the conditions that have already been met and that a lot of them allowed for improvements and road improvements. And so we went through the conditions to see which ones would still apply, thinking that it would be cleaner for future review to just look at the ones that are still in effect.
Okay. I mean, that sounds like a laudable goal. However, I think it might be problematic. When I went back to look at the original conditions and compared them to your new proposed conditions and trying to visualize what work still needs to be done, there's going to be construction of a new building. But dust control was removed. There's presumably going to be some excavating and grading, and yet a drainage section was removed that talks about prior to issuance of any grading or building permits, you need a drainage plan. Let's see. Then the grading permit section, the original condition 7, was removed. And then the original 1BD also talks about building and grading permits. And then 1E talks about time extensions. So where does that leave us if all that gets removed, but the originally contemplated construction isn't even complete yet? Are you saying none of those things apply anymore?
Commissioner O'Grady, Nancy Orton. Actually, they all apply, and they all get picked up at the building permit stage.
Actually, if I may help you out a little bit here, the site is a built-out site. It's totally improved except for these two, the structure and the Valley Road, and the building that sits up above the retaining wall is already there.
I understand, Commissioner Taubing, about the retaining wall. It's just that 7 is not strictly about a retaining wall.
Okay.
It starts out prior to issuance of building permits, submit grading, sedimentation, erosion control plans.
Perhaps we can jump in between Glenn and I. These are standard requirements that get picked up at building permits. That's really nothing special for this particular item, except for, like, using 7 as an example. The grading, erosion control, and sedimentation permits are standard requirements of a construction permit, but that condition also talked about the retaining wall, and so it was the addition of retaining wall that made that condition special. And I want to speak specifically to the time extension. There is no need to carry that forward. This is a vested project, and so there's no need to carry that one forward, and it would just be confusing, actually. And the conditions that sit on the original CUP aren't going away. It's just that it's much easier for, if Carrie decides to retire next week, who's the most familiar with this project, and Erilyn picks up the project to review it for when the new plans come in, he doesn't have to pile through a lot of conditions that have already been complied with and are done and call Glenn up and say, well, so did all these street improvements get done? We know they were done. Carrie's the expert on it, and she's been through the conditions and has... If there's a few conditions that you want to bring forward to absolutely make sure they get caught, we can bring those conditions forward too, but I would hate to just leave all the conditions in place because things like the road improvements have been completed.
If I may, this is the what's new and current list of conditions. And speaking as a former planner, it's much easier, I think, for staff to work with new and current conditions rather than original intentions, which some of which have been completed and some of which have not been completed. You have to sift through all that. So this is much easier for efficient administration.
So there were no life of the project conditions that were deleted. Is that correct? I mean, you wouldn't delete conditions
Absolutely.
Applied for the life of the project.
No.
So operational type conditions would continue to.
Okay, because I didn't find any of those to start with. So I think maybe our current conditions are use a little bit different language. Okay. Let me see if I have any other concerns. I think that was it. That's it. I don't see any more speaker condition. Excuse me, Commissioner lights on to speak. So, if there's no further discussion, may I have a motion?
Yes. I'd like to move to approve the development plan and coastal development permit DRC 2011-00046 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B as amended by environmental finding E.
Second.
Second, please. Thank you, Commissioner Christensen. Ramona, please call the roll.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Commissioner Christensen?
Yes.
Commissioner Irving?
Yes.
Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Chairman O'Grady?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Thank you, Ms. Brown.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Olszewski. Okay, Ramona, would you, Commissioner Topping, you have your light on. Is that from past? Okay.
Hearing to consider a request by Mark Ames and Verizon Wireless for a conditional use permit. County file number DRC 2011-00049, Supervisorial District 1, Erlen Singwall, Project Manager.
Mr. Singwall, before you get started, I'd like to ask commissioners if they have any ex parte to report. Looks like no one does. So good morning, Mr. Singwall.
Good morning, Chairman O'Grady and members of the commission, Erlen Singwall, County Planning staff. So
So this project is a request by Verizon Wireless and Mark Ames for a conditional use permit to construct and operate an unmanned wireless communications facility.
Bless you.
So the main elements of the facility include 12 panel antennas, which would be mounted within a new 40-foot tall bow elevated. Here's an aerial photograph of the Ames property. The property is situated on the urban-rural fringe between the Templeton URL and the Adelaida planning area. It, again, is bordered by residential suburban subdivisions to the east and agricultural uses on the other three sides. And the building site itself is located on the northern edge of the property, within 40 feet of this property line here and within 700 feet of the nearest residential parcel line. And that's shown on this aerial photograph here. Here's some photographs of the project site. This photograph here shows the existing agricultural barn, which the proposed equipment shelter would be designed to resemble. And here are a couple photographs of the building site itself. You can see the site has been heavily disturbed due to historic animal grazing. And the project would include mitigation measures to place protective fencing around these chaparral shrubs so they're not disturbed or removed during construction activities. And here's a photo here of the pre-application meeting that was held on the site, in addition to Verizon's project team and planning staff, myself, representatives from the Templeton Area Advisory Group, as well as one of the neighbors also attended the pre-application meeting, as did the Templeton Fire Chief as well. Here's the overall site plan. Again, the project site's located on the northern edge of the property. It would be accessed from an existing dirt access road. Templeton Fire, however, is requesting that any section of the road that exceeds 12% grade have all-weather base laid over it. And those areas are, it's difficult to see on this plan here, but they are shown and shaded. Here's an enlarged site plan showing those main elements of the facility. You can see here the 40-foot tall, faux elevated water tank, the 188-square-foot equipment shelter, and the 210-gallon diesel generator. Here's a southwest elevation of the proposed project showing the same thing. I will point out here, you can see that the AC compressors are actually located on concrete slabs beneath the proposed water tank. This design was actually proposed by Verizon because it is less noisy compared to placing the AC compressors on the equipment shelter itself, and that's because this design eliminates the vibration that results from having an AC compressor unit attached to the building. And here's another elevation from the north. You can see that the microwave dish will be located here. The applicant did submit photo simulations of the proposed facility. This photo simulation here is not a public view. Really, the purpose of this simulation is just to show how the facility would look from up close and to show how it would be designed to appear as a rural, rustic structure that blends with the character of the surrounding landscape. And this is taken from the northern property line adjacent to the agricultural parcel to the north. Now, in this simulation, it's difficult to see the proposed water tank. The reason why I show this simulation, though, is because this is the closest public view to the project site. It's from the end of Donaldson Place, and the view is mostly obscured by these existing tall trees at the end of the cul-de-sac there. However, generally, when we're evaluating the visual impacts of any development, we're primarily concerned with views from major arterials. In this particular case, the two main arterials in West Templeton are Los Tablas Road and Vineyard Drive. Here's the visual simulation from Los Tablas Road. This viewing distance is approximately half a mile, and from that distance, the proposed water tank would appear to blend with the existing setting. You can see it would silhouette above the ridge, but from this distance, it would not be readily noticeable, and also it is designed as a rural, rustic, agricultural type structure to blend with the existing visual setting. And it's even less visible from the other main arterial in West Templeton, Vineyard Drive. Now, one objective of the project is to improve wireless coverage in West Templeton. To help illustrate that, the applicant did submit radio frequency propagation maps. I will point out, though, that as the applicant, I'm sure, will explain, the main objective isn't to improve Lincoln Road. Verizon has indicated that those are not feasible alternative sites for this project since they would not meet the project's coverage goals. And the applicant, again, can elaborate on that and their alternatives analysis, which concluded, as I stated. Another section of our telecommunications ordinance requires carriers to consider locating the facility on an existing structure before proposing to construct a new antenna support structure, such as the proposed elevated water tank. And consistent with that requirement, Verizon did attempt to enter into lease agreements with the owners of some of the existing tall structures in West Templeton, including the hospital, another medical building across the street from the hospital, and then the Osabin water tank here. However, the applicant was not able to enter into lease agreements with the owners of those structures, and the applicant will speak more about that. So having exhausted those options, the applicant went ahead and proposed to construct the faux water tank structure. Now, one of the key issues that has been raised by the neighbors of this project is its potential noise impacts. The neighbors explain how the quiet noise environment is one of the key defining characteristics of the urban-rural fringe of West Templeton, and they're concerned that the introduction of this additional noise source could really degrade the quality of life in the residential suburban neighborhood there. So we did not get a noise study for this project, and the reason for that is because the amount of noise emitted by this facility is relatively small. It's not much more than you would expect from a single-family residence. And also, it would be located over 700 feet from the nearest residential parcel line and about 800 feet from the nearest sensitive receptor, the nearest residence. This slide just outlines staff's rationale for concluding that the project would not be audible from the nearest residential parcel. The applicant did submit manufacturer specifications showing that the proposed generator would produce noise levels of 67 dBA at a distance of 23 feet, and the AC condensers would produce noise of 63 dBA right at the source. So, okay, that's the noise from the equipment, but what would the noise levels be at 700 feet? Although we don't have a noise study for this project, the previous project located just a couple thousand feet to the north, the Osabin facility, did include a noise study. The Osabin facility did propose essentially the same noise-generating equipment. And the noise analysis for that project showed that at a distance of 100 feet, it would produce 43 dBA. So based on that, staff felt it was reasonable to conclude that the project at a distance of 700 feet from the nearest residential parcel would be able to comply with the noise element and produce less than 45 dBA during the nighttime, which is the nighttime limit based on the noise element. And then also, just as an additional assurance, the project is actually conditioned to not be audible from the nearest residential parcel. And I'll point out, too, that the project is also conditioned so that the generator would only operate during the daytime, and this most restrictive 45 dBA noise limit is a nighttime noise limit. So with that, staff recommends adoption of the mitigated negative declaration and approval of the conditional use permit, and I'm available for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Singelwald. Any questions, staff? Not at this time. Okay. Then I would ask the applicant if the applicant would like to make a presentation. And I would also say that if anyone wishes to speak during public comment, it's a requirement to fill out a speaker slip. Those are located in the back of the room. And Ms. Knight, if you very, very good. You have yours.
Welcome. Excuse me. Good morning. Tricia Knight representing Verizon Wireless this morning. Staff did a great job of summarizing. I don't know if you had remembered when we were here with the OSIBIN project and what we've been through. We really did go the extra mile this time, reaching out to the neighbors and the Community Services District and the Templeton Advisory Committee prior to even selecting the site, went with the advisory committee meetings. I also, we went ahead and sent out an informational flyer to the about 60 homes in the immediate vicinity to let them know that this was going to be coming to the commission. And so I think we really did our due diligence this time in making sure that we could address any concerns up front. We just still did get some concerns about noise, which is Mr. Singelwald did explain how we're going to address those issues. So overall, I think a much better project around for the community, pointing out yet again that during the Paso Robles earthquake that Verizon was one of the only facilities that was able to the template, the type of information to provide.
Wonderful. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. I think there are no more questions of you at this time from commissioners. And so I would open to public comment. I don't have any speaker slips. I see no one approaching the podium, so I would close public comment and ask Commissioner Irving to open commission deliberations.
Thank you. And I, too, would like to commend Verizon for quite a different application from what we saw previously, and I appreciate the extra mile that you guys went this time around. Arlen, I have a couple questions about the faux material that is being used for this water tank. Is this something that is highly durable, or does it deteriorate in sunlight, and is there a condition of maintenance of it so that it continues to look like a barn 10 years out from now? I mean, a water tank 10 years out from now.
So the material, it's like a fiberglass material. At least the material that would go over the antennas is a fiberglass. They call it an RF transparent material. In my experience, it's a fairly durable material, but perhaps the applicant can speak more about that.
Yes, and if Ms. Knight, if you would, my question is, and I realized it was some sort of a fiberglass material. From experience, I know fiberglass will deteriorate in sunlight over a period of time. So the question was, had to do with maintenance of that, so it continues to resemble what it's intended to.
And actually, Commissioner Irving, let me answer the second part of your question before Ms. Knight speaks. Condition number 22 on this project does require the colors of materials to be maintained for the life of the project.
There you go. Thank you. That actually probably answers my question, unless you would like to add
anything. I would like
to,
go ahead just for future reference for this type of installation. The water tanks tend to be really useful in these rural environments like this. There's part of that we want to weather a little bit, because when we first paint it, we try to make it look as old as possible, because we want it to kind of look like it's been there for a while versus
right.
brand new. So we like it to degrade a little bit. When it starts to peel and chip and get beyond that, that condition is covered. And how that is sort of monitored is anytime we do an equipment modification, any modification to our antennas, cabling, generator swap outs, whatever it is, we have to go through the planning department to do that. And that's when they take a look at the site and determine if any maintenance needs to be done at that time.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That answers that question. Arlen, on condition number six, prior to issuance of a construction permit, it talks about a fence placed around shrubs and trees within 50 feet in place for duration of project construction. Did I miss somewhere? Is the top of this hill going to be fenced off from trespassers or anybody coming onto the site? And is that are we talking separate fences here, one to protect the vegetation and then one to protect the site for the duration of the project?
correct. Condition number six is actually for temporary fencing, so that the native vegetation isn't disturbed during construction activities, and that fencing would be removed before the building permit's final for the project. There is no security fencing, long-term security fencing proposed as part of this project.
And isn't that normal, though? That don't you normally have a security fence around, again, Ms. Knight, maybe that's a question you could answer. Don't you normally have a security fence around these sites?
It's depending on where it is. So this can, when you are accessing this from Vineyard Drive, by the time you get just before the site to go up the hill, it's gated, and it's a locked gate. So it's not readily accessible to the public. On the northern property line, which is about 40 feet from our site, is a barbed wire fence. So it's fenced and not, you'd have to really want to get in there, but we don't have a fence around it specifically for that reason. If it was at a high school or something like that, then yes, we normally do fence those
the,
types of
the previous site, Osibans, you had a fence around that because of the proximity to the development.
Exactly.
Right? Okay.
Exactly.
Thank you. Somewhat akin to this question, Arlen, there is a, on your site map, or one of those maps, there is an undeveloped piece of ground that I believe is residential suburban. And I believe I've heard that there is a tentative map on that property. Do you know what I'm referring to? So it would be lie south of the Donaldson development. I don't know if you can, if you want to scroll through your your maps.
If we could put the PowerPoint back up, I can...
Yeah, that right there. So that's a good one. So that, yes, right where your cursor is there. I believe that's residential suburban. And I'm just curious as to... Well, maybe you could speak to the topography. The existing home site on the subject parcel, which is, I think I see where a little house is or the barn is. Going over to the Verizon Ames site, up where the road is, come back a little bit down. Is that, that's a residence or a barn?
That is the property owner's residence.
Right. So from there, going down to the residential suburban property, intervening topography would block the view of that or the of the water tower from that residential suburban area, or do you recall?
I don't recall. My recollection is that the project is on top of a knoll, and this slopes up, so I can't. I don't think there would be intervening topography.
That's fine. I just was curious as to sort of who came first and chicken and the egg sort of situation there. The other question I have really has to do with the one thing that we've seen comments on in the past, and the issue of noise. And your condition 25 says simply all facilities shall be operated to ensure noise generated is not audible. That seems a little vague. How is that a condition? As we know, some of those neighbors may be quite sensitive, and so they're going to complain, and many people won't. How does this really impact or work as a condition? Mm-hmm. Just says it shall be operated. We know there's time issues in the operation, running of the generator during daylight hours, right, and all of that.
Well, so that is a good point. I agree that is a very high bar to meet. To not be audible. This is a standard condition we put on cell site projects. I've never received a phone call from neighbors in the past expressing any concern over the noise from a cell site, and we have cell sites that are significantly closer to residences than this one would be. But I see your point. I'll just another option would be to word the condition so that the project complies with the noise element, which would not exceed 45 dBA during nighttime hours or 50 dBA during daytime hours at the nearest residential parcel line. The nice thing about this condition is that you don't need a noise meter to verify compliance with it. If a neighbor does hear the AC units or the generator operating, they can just call in code enforcement and it would become a condition compliance issue.
Commissioner Irving, I share your concern and the reasoning for it. I would suggest that this condition be reworded to match what you say in your staff report, Mr. Singewald. In other words, make a requirement for Verizon that they furnish a generator that's 63 dB at 20 feet, for example, and that the condensing unit shall not exceed whatever 60, what they are at the source. That's something.
I thought they already did do that. Yeah. I don't know that you need to add a condition on types of generators and things of that sort.
Where is that condition? I didn't see that.
Well, I thought it was in the project description.
Oh, it is.
So I don't have a. I don't need to modify that, and I can probably live with this condition 25. I really bring it up for conversation amongst the commissioners here. If you feel that if staff's wording of this is sufficient, I can live with that. If you'd like to have further teeth in it, I guess that's. I really am bringing it up for discussion. It just seems
lights on.
Rather vague. So I'll back off.
Mr. Chair?
Oh.
Commissioner. You want to call us?
Are you finished with your... yes, Commissioner Toppin.
Well, if that's a standard boilerplate condition that we use on all cell tower sites, and it's been successfully implemented, either ignored or implemented, I'm not sure which, I see no problem with leaving it in. In fact, it would probably be better than to try to tweak it for this particular case.
I will as soon as the chair recognizes me.
You are recognized.
Thank you. Yes, I would agree with Mr. Topping. My feeling is that this is actually is about as broad of a condition as you can get because and that's good. In other words, if there's a complaint, then there's a problem. But I think what staff is trying to say is that with a site so far from the nearest resident, the reality is no one's going to hear it. And that has also been borne out.
Be audible at all.
Yes.
So it could go on and on, I guess, because if someone really wants to hear it, they could possibly hear it.
Yeah.
It's not. I mean, it is a noise-generating source, bottom line.
So my point being that it should comply
with
the noise element.
Only because we know noise is an issue here. It's been brought up several times. So, right.
Commissioner Murphy?
That's my concern, because the previous project, I believe we were looking at just meeting it at the property lines, the 45 decibel, not that you couldn't hear it from Ironwind Lake or whatever. But somebody said this is a standard condition for all cell sites, that the neighbors can't hear it?
I've never seen this.
Was that said?
This Airline Singwall Planning Staff, this has been a standard condition for cell sites, but I understand the concerns, and again, I'd propose language where we specify not that it shouldn't be audible, but that it should comply with the 45 dBA nighttime and the 50 dBA daytime limit of the noise.
I think it would benefit by having that specific.
Yeah, I mean, we use that noise standard for all of our projects. I don't know why we'd single out one type of project and require nobody can hear it at all.
That's
a pretty high standard for somebody to have to meet and try and enforce.
Commission, three of us agree with that.
Well, I'm not in disagreement with either side of it. I'm just saying if you're going for maximum receptor protection, you'd go with this one. And if you're going for normal protections for everybody, you'd go with the noise standard. I'm happy. I like the other site, too, so I'm really open to this.
Well, I like this site. I think I've seen it.
This is better.
I think it's a much better site. I really appreciate the extra work Verizon did, and I would like to see that it's just simply this condition be amended to comply with the
county noise. My concern would be the next project is 10 decibels at the property line, and we're saying, oh, no, it's got to be zero. We can't prove
Thank
that.
You.
Okay. We will come up with a new condition.
Okay. I took the words right out of my mouth. The consensus of the commission is to amend this condition. Just for clarification purposes, however, Mr. Singewald, the 45 dBA, is that the number, and is that at the property line?
Why don't we just nighttime state it has to comply with the noise standards?
Well, I just want everybody to understand what the noise standard is, and it's 45 dBA at the property line, not at the residence 700 feet away.
That's correct.
Okay. When I was looking at your slide earlier, and I thought I heard you say it was based on the other based on the other sound study, acoustical study that you had done, that it was 40. You wouldn't hit 45 dBA at the residence. But we're talking property line here, just to be clear.
But there is a separate indoor requirement in the noise standard that would also have to be complied with at the residence.
So it could be.
That's why I say want to apply that they meet the noise standards. We don't want to write a new noise standard. That's there for a reason, and the project has to comply with it. And if they do, I don't even know if it needs to be put in here because they have to comply with it anyway. But if we want to address noise, I think it should say they must comply with the noise standards. If you want to spell them out, that's fine, but I don't think we need to. Maybe that's too simple.
Well, okay. Staff is going to be fashioning a condition here for our scrutiny shortly. So, County Council would like to speak.
Thank you.
Ms. McDonald.
Thank you. This is Whitney McDonald from the County Council's office. I just wanted to clarify for the record, I went back and looked at the mitigated negative declaration that's been proposed for this project and looked at the noise study or the noise section, and it relies on the kind of background ordinance standards for the finding that there would not be a noise impact here. So I do think that you have some leeway with the environmental review that has been done with this project to reword that condition to basically state it how it's, you discussed and make it consistent with the noise ordinance as opposed to more restrictive in terms of not being audible.
Thank you for confirming the direction we're headed here. So, Commissioner Topping, your light's on.
So it could be at the property line at the north, which is what, 60 feet away? 70 feet?
The property line to the north, I believe, it's 40 or 50 feet away.
Okay,
but those noise standards apply to residential parcels.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, so that's agriculture. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Do any other commissioners have questions? Okay, I have a few. Mr. Singewald, in your staff report, you suggested the applicant talk about capacity versus coverage, so I'd like to ask Ms. Knight to help clarify that for the public and the commission.
Tricia Knight, once again, representing Verizon Wireless. So currently there is a facility that's on the Grain Building downtown Templeton that provides most of the service for the downtown area. And then once you get towards the freeway and towards this west area of Templeton, it starts to die off, as you saw in the coverage maps. What happens is, the way that it's been described to me that was helpful, was that if I've got 10 people making this...
Do you account communications from Highway 101? Just out of curiosity.
You mean, does it consider the traffic going through Highway 101?
No, the calls made from Highway 101.
Yes. So
I notice there's a dead zone in Atascadero.
There is, and this will help that as well, because there's an overwhelmed...
Are you criticizing my community?
There is an overwhelmed site in Atascadero that this will actually help as well, and that's exactly probably what you're talking about. We consider those areas of when people are going to work and coming home from work, high traffic conditions, and that's when we have the most network failures. A lot of people are conducting business in their cars. So this is definitely going to help alleviate that problem as well.
Okay.
It's highly illegal, but...
Hands-free only.
Shh, we won't say anything. Okay, thank you, Ms. Knight. As far as visual impacts are concerned, I think I read in your staff report, Mr. Singewald, that the electric utilities necessary to serve this site would be underground. Are they all underground, underground for a certain distance, and are there any other overhead utilities necessitated by this project?
All of the utilities would be underground. They would probably pull power from the nearest power pole, but then underground it to the site.
Great. The negative deck says something about using sound attenuated air conditioning units. Is that some special thing that the neg deck writer had in mind? And if so, what are we talking about here? Is he talking about putting a wall around the AC units for sound attenuation, or is...
No, that's just the design of the AC unit, and the applicant did provide the spec sheets to show that the proposed AC units are the some of the quietest that are available.
So they're internally sound attenuated, and that meets what the intent of the negative deck.
Exactly.
Okay, how many of these air conditioning units are there? Because I understand if there's one, it's 63 dBA, but if there's two and they're running simultaneously, then you're talking about a doubling of the sound, which would be another 3 dB. So are there two, three, four, how many air units are there?
There would be two AC condensers, and they would not operate simultaneously. They would cycle one to the other.
Ah, so it's like a backup.
Yes.
Okay. An emergency generator will only operate for 15 minutes each month or week or...
There was an inconsistency between the staff report and the letter from Verizon's attorneys. I did clarify this morning with Ms. Knight, and the attorney's letter is correct. They actually would operate once a week for 15 minutes.
Okay, that's why I asked the question. And so that once a week could occur on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or Saturday.
Correct.
Okay.
That was a recommendation of TAD that we're implementing.
Okay. A major consideration in the ordinances, I'm looking at page 2-7 of the staff report and co-location, and I understand that the applicant investigated trying to co-locate these facilities at another site and was unable to do so to achieve project objectives. However, we're setting the table here with this installation for possible future co-location. So I'd like to know what capacity is being designed into this installation for that future co-location that's contemplated by the ordinances.
So Ms. Knight can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the proposed water tank would have capacity for one additional carrier within the cylinder of the tank.
Okay.
And a third carrier could potentially place antennas on the legs of the water tank with a negligible visual impact. And Trish and I were talking about the one carrier in particular, Metro PCS, which is a carrier that's been building a network in this area. They actually have very relatively narrow antennas and smaller antennas compared to the other carriers, and that would be a perfect fit to go on the legs of a structure like this.
Ms. Knight, would you like to confirm that for us, please?
That is correct. So ideally, we would probably see someone like AT&T going in the cylinder directly underneath Verizon's antennas, and then like Erlyn was saying, we would line up the antennas for a smaller carrier like Metro PCS to be on the actual wooden frames of the legs to line up so that they wouldn't be really highly visible. So up to three carriers in this area would potentially be possible.
Okay, that's great. Mr. Singwall, do you think it's necessary or desirable to add a condition to that effect?
I believe that is adequately addressed by condition number 23. The quietest possible design.
Okay. I thought I saw in your diagram the need to... augment the access road where there's like greater than a 12% grade in spots. I didn't see any conditions requiring that, nor fire truck turnarounds. Did I miss that?
No, we only have a generic condition that the applicant shall comply with life and safety requirements of the fire code, which is condition number 12, and we could add some more specificity to that. Actually, I'm sorry, that's not 12. That's number 10.
I'm just raising it because I can recall in the past where we have actually added more detail. I'll leave it to your judgment, or Mr. Marshall's, whether I think that's desirable to have that in there.
Sure. Honorable Chair O'Grady, Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. In this case, we definitely pay more consideration when there's residential units. This is an inhabited structure. They do have to meet CAL FIRE requirements.
Okay.
So it's probably okay as is.
All right. We've we've talked a lot about noise here today and about the importance of minimizing the noise and how we're saying it's going to be meet the standards. But I don't see a finding on noise, and I'd ask County Council if there shouldn't, in this particular case, be a finding on noise since it's been such a...
There's no need for a finding on noise because we aren't asking for any kind of exception or special standard to it. So the standard required findings for conditional use permit are adequate.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Griffin is very quick on the microphone there. Let's see. That may be my last question. Commissioner Topping, I see you'd like to speak.
Yeah, just following through on your question about fire safety at number 12 during construction, ignition control of ignition sources. Is that who does that? Who watches the construction so you don't start a fire? Is it building and safety? Is it the fire department? I mean, that's sort of, I'm just trying to figure out what this means in a practical sense. Does the fire department come in at all anywhere in this? Oh, yeah.
I would say everyone watches for fire.
Yeah. The fire department does come on site.
They do come on site as part of the routine. Yeah. Okay. That's the answer I need.
Oh, I did see one other question that I think perhaps came from an applicant letter. I don't rightly recall, but I think there was a question as why not locate this site further from the subdivision? I mean, it's a big parcel there, and yet it's kind of in the one edge of it. Could you comment on that, Mr. Singlewald?
Well, for the applicant's coverage objectives, they need to be at the highest elevation on the parcel, and since the available information showed that the project would comply with the noise element, and since it would comply with the visual screening standards of the telecommunications ordinance, staff didn't feel that there was any need to move the site.
So the topography would tend to reduce the objectives of the project if it was moved? Is that what I understand?
It could reduce the coverage objective.
So this is the optimum location on that site?
It's an optimal location from RF perspective, but most importantly from planning perspective, it complies with all of the applicable requirements.
Okay. I don't see any other commissioner lights on, so Commissioner Irving, would you like to?
I'd like to see his modified condition.
Oh, yes. We do have one of those.
Chair O'Grady, while that's happening, I've got a response to Commissioner Irving's question about the tentative subdivision. I looked onto the planning's website, and there's two tracts, tract 1971, which expired back in 1998, and then a subsequent tract, 2319, which appears to have expired in 2011 after numerous time extensions.
Oh, okay. Thank you. That's helpful.
Are you working on that condition that we could put up on the screen?
Yes. Have a...
I move that we adopt the mitigated negative declaration, ED11-106, and that we approve the conditional use permit, DRC-2011-00049, based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B as modified today.
Second.
Discussion, Commissioner Topping.
Yeah, is it necessary to go on using the word faux?
what would you suggest?
Can't we just say fake or artificial? Sorry, I thought I'd add
a little humor and diversion.
How about next time, so we don't have to revise that condition?
Okay. All right. Anyway, I second it. No comment.
Okay.
I just wanted to correct myself on the internal sound issue or requirements only apply when both properties are residential. So I was incorrect when I brought that up that would apply. It doesn't in this case.
Thank you for clarifying that. Ramona, would you please call the roll?
Commissioner Irving?
Yes.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Commissioner Christensen?
Yes.
Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Chairman O'Grady?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Thank you to the applicant and Mr. Singewald. May I have a motion to take all testimony and documents into the record?
So moved.
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? None. Motion passes 5-0. We didn't even make it to recess today.
we get a full day's pay.
Oh, yeah. Ms. Griffin, do we get a full day's pay?
I think it's prorated.
Oh, boy. that's not
maybe we should adjourn for a while.
Answer I hoped for. Okay.
Well, look at it this way. You have a time now to go enjoy downtown. And
there you go. Are you on the Chamber of Commerce as well? Okay. May I have a motion to adjourn the meeting till the next regular meeting on March 29th, 2012?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? None. Motion passes 5-0. Meeting adjourned.
Amazing.
No.